communications officer appears on screen.
What is it?
Snarls Cetricus Ra.
Deepest apologies for the interruption, beloved leader,
the officer says, keeping his eyes downcast.
You have an urgent message from Fury Dunra. It had better be,
Cetricus Ra grumbles. He waves a hand impatiently at the screen.
Very well. Put her through.
The screen flashes, crackles, and then a Mogadorian woman appears. She has two long braids, pinned up around her bald head, and a sizable cut above her eyebrow. She's surrounded on all sides by jungle. Apparently, a message from this Trueborn is important enough to delay our flight down to New York. I try to sit up a little bit in my seat, fighting through the fog to pay attention.
What is it, Fury?
Cetricus Ra says, coldly.
Why have you contacted me directly?
The Moog woman, Fury, hesitates before she speaks. Maybe she's taken aback by the human face addressing her with such authority. Or maybe she's just scared of her beloved leader.
They're here,
Fury says at last, a note of triumph in her voice.
The guard have activated the sanctuary.
Cetricus Ra leans back in his seat, his eyebrows arched in surprise. He laces his hands in front of him in consideration.
Very good,
he replies.
Excellent. Your orders are to keep them there, Fury Dunra. On your life. I will join you shortly.
As you wish, beloved. Cetricus Ra severs the connection before Fury Dunra can finish. The mentions of the guard and the sanctuary have me a little more aware. I try to think of Six and Marina, of John and Nine. I know they would want me to fight through this. It's just so difficult to keep my mind from going blank, to keep my body from slouching.
For years I've pursued them,
Cetricus Ra says quietly, almost to himself.
To wipe out the last bit of resistance to the Mogadorian progress. To take control of what those elder fools buried on this planet. Now the day has come when everything I fought for will be mine, all at once. Tell me, granddaughter, how can there be any doubt of Mogadorian superiority?
He doesn't really want a response. Cetricus Ra just likes to hear himself talk. I let a slow, medicated smile form on my face. That seems to please him. My grandfather reaches out and pats me on the knee.
You're feeling better, aren't you?
He says. He flips a few levers on the console, and our ship's engines vibrate to life.
Come, let us go take what is ours.
With that, Cetricus Ra navigates the ship forward. We zip through the docking bay, past the rows of Mogadorian warriors. They thump their fists against their chests as we go, shouting out gravelly Mogadorian encouragement. We exit through the same passage as Five's body. That part, seeing him brutalized and then tossed aside like so much garbage, I'm glad to lose to the fog. We descend on Manhattan. I can see all the humans gathered below. There are thousands of them crowded in front of a fancy-looking set of buildings and its surrounding campus. I can make out a stage down there, too. It's all built on the bank of a gray, choppy river. I remember the Washington from my vision, the smoky smells that choked the air. That will be New York soon. I wonder if these people will throw themselves into the river when their city begins to burn. The people below point up at our ship. I can hear them shouting and screaming out greetings. These humans, the ones who came closest to the Anubis, they don't think they're in any danger. It occurs to me that we're traveling into this throng of people without any Mogadorian guards. I loll my head towards my grandfather, wet my lips, and manage to find words. "We're facing them alone?" I ask him. He smiles.
"Of course. I mean to elevate these people, not harm them. We have nothing to fear from the humans. My servants on Earth have arranged for a greeting that I find more than suitable."
He's up to something, obviously. Probably already has this whole event planned out. I know it's unlikely even a crowd of humans this size would stand a chance against Cetricus Ra and all his powers. But part of me hopes maybe one of them will see through whatever sideshow he's got planned and take some shots at the scary alien. Of course, that would mean my death before they could stop Cetricus Ra. At this point, it seems almost worth it. I feel whatever the Mogadorians injected into me crawling around beneath my skin. I can't endure any more of that. The descent is over. We hover about 15 feet above the stage. A nervous-looking older man in a suit, some kind of politician, waits for us there. There are flashbulbs going off like crazy. I blink my eyes and try to keep from sleepwalking through this.
"Come, Ella. Let us greet our subjects,"
Cetricus Ra says. He picks up his golden cane, the obsidian eye of Thalok catching the light. I'm not sure why he brought that with him. I guess he doesn't want to face our so-called subjects completely unarmed. Or maybe he thinks it makes him look noble, like a king with a scepter. I stand up, slightly unsteady. Cetricus Ra offers me his arm. I hug my hand through it. The door of our transport ship opens, and a glowing staircase extends outward, creating a path for us to the stage. The crowd gasps as we emerge. Through my bleary eyes, I can see dozens of TV cameras trained on us. The crowd is hushed in amazement. What do we look like to them? Aliens. Aliens that look exactly like humans. A handsome older man and his pale granddaughter. Cetricus Ra raises his hand and waves to the people. It's a royal thing, courtly and showy. When he speaks, his voice booms like he's hooked up to a microphone.
"Greetings, people of Earth,"
he bellows in perfect English, his voice firm and reassuring.
"My name is Cetricus Ra, and this is my granddaughter, Ella. We have traveled a great distance to come humbly before you with wishes of peace."
The crowd actually cheers. They don't know any better. Cetricus Ra gazes beatifically across all their upturned faces. But when his eyes settle on the old man standing on the stage, I feel a tension go through his arm. Cetricus Ra says under his breath. Something isn't right. The greeter isn't what he expected. Or maybe there were supposed to be more humans waiting on stage with outstretched arms. Maybe there were supposed to be bouquets of flowers. Undeterred, Cetricus Ra draws himself up a little taller and proceeds down the rest of the steps.
"We have much to offer your people,"
he continues in his booming, charitable voice.
"Advancements in medicine to heal your sick, farming techniques to feed your hungry, and technology that will make your lives easier and more productive. All we ask in return, after our long journey, is shelter from the cold of space."
I glance over the crowd to see if any of them are buying it. I end up locking eyes with a young guy in the front row, pushed up right next to some TV cameras, his dark eyes seeking mine. He wears a hooded sweatshirt, long black hair spilling out from inside. And he's tall and athletic and... In my condition, it actually takes me a moment to recognize him. Not so long ago, I balanced on his shoulders and he taught me how to fight. 9. Seeing him, knowing that I'm not alone, that all isn't lost just yet, it makes me snap back to my senses. The pain in my shoulder increases exponentially, like something is trying to crawl its way out of me. Whatever's inside me doesn't want me to use my legacies. I ignore it and reach out with my telepathy. 9. His cane. It's how he changes forms. Get his cane and smash it. A feral grin spreads across 9's face and he nods to me. My heartbeat quickens. Next to me, Cetricus Ra's posture has stiffened. My hand is trapped in the crook of his elbow. He knows that something is up, yet he proceeds with the show all the same.
I expected more of them to be here on this momentous occasion. Yet I see one of your leaders has come out to greet me.
Cetricus Ra extends his hand to the old man.
I come to you in peace, sir. Let this cement the friendship between our two great races.
Instead of clasping Cetricus Ra's hand, the old man takes a step away. There's deep fear in his eyes, but it's not run-and-scream fear. It's cornered animal fear. The old man has a microphone of his own, and as the TV cameras swing in his direction, he begins to yell.
This man, this thing, is a liar. What?
Cetricus Ra takes an aggressive step towards the old man, and I'm loosed from his elbow. For the first time since I've been in his company, the Mogadorian leader actually looks surprised. Surprised and furious. A murmur of uncertainty passes through the crowd. The old man shouts something else. I hear the words, enslavement and death. But otherwise, I can't really hear him. No one can. Cetricus Ra has used his telekinesis to crush the old man's microphone.
You must be confused, my friend,
Cetricus Ra says through gritted teeth, still trying to salvage this farce.
My intentions are pure...
Cetricus Ra is suddenly knocked off balance. I know why. A telekinetic attack. I watch as his golden cane is ripped out of hand. 9 plucks it out of the air as he hops onto the stage, grinning at Cetricus Ra. I sense movement to my left. I turn my head to see John also hop onto the stage. They're flanking him, just like we practiced in the lecture hall. Peppered throughout the crowd, I see men and women in dark suits, all of them slyly pulling firearms into view. The crowd is beginning to buzz as some civilians, the smarter ones, begin to back away from the stage. It's a trap, I realize gleefully. The guard are here. Now, Cetricus Ra really looks surprised. And, dare I say, a little frightened.
You have been led astray,
Cetricus Ra screams, pointing his now empty hands at 9 and John.
These boys are fugitives, terrorists from my home world. I don't know what they've told you. We haven't told them anything,
John says, interrupting. His voice doesn't carry like Cetricus Ra's, but people in the crowd crane their necks to listen.
We'll let them make up their own minds. A genocidal maniac is easy to spot. Lies.
Do it now, I urge 9 telepathically.
I wonder what will happen if I do this,
9 asks, fiddling with Cetricus Ra's cane. Before Cetricus Ra can lunge in his direction, 9 raises the cane over his head and smashes it down on the stage. The obsidian eye in its center explodes in a cloud of ash. Things happen quickly after that. Cetricus Ra's body begins to thrash and spasm. The handsome human form he's been so attached to begins to slough off him, like a snake shedding its skin. The real Cetricus Ra, pale, verging on bloodless, ancient and hideous, tattooed across his bald skull, a thick scar around his neck, clad in spiky Mogadorian armor, stands revealed on the stage. Many in the crowd scream. Even more recoil in horror and turn to run. A gunshot goes off. I hear the bullet whistle past my ear before it ricochets harmlessly off the Mogadorian ship behind me. The gunshots only frighten people more, and now it's a full-blown stampede in front of the stage. More shots are fired, this time into the air. One of the agents taking aim on Cetricus Ra goes down, bull-rushed by the terrified spectators. It's chaos. With a monstrous howl, Cetricus Ra grows to 15 feet in size. The stage beneath us groans. The old man who was on stage with the guard tries to run into the crowd, but Cetricus Ra grabs him with his telekinesis and hurls him like a missile into nine. The two of them fall off the stage in a heap. Fireballs come to life in John's hands. They go out immediately as Cetricus Ra triggers his Draenen field. That doesn't stop John from charging in, pulling his Loric dagger out of his sheath as he comes.
"Yes!"
Cetricus Ra screams, beckoning John in.
"Come racing towards your death, boy!"
Unaffected by Cetricus Ra's version of Draenen, I pick up a broken piece of his cane. My fingers are clumsy, and I nearly drop it twice before I'm able to grasp it tightly enough. I concentrate, ignore the shredding pain under my skin, and charge the shrapnel with my Draenen. When the broken shard glows bright red, I jab it into the back of Cetricus Ra's leg. The Mogadorian overlord cries out and shrinks down to his normal size. I sense the Draenen field canceling legacies lift. Too late. Cetricus Ra stumbles forward in a futile attempt to get away from me. The Draenen charged cane is buried an inch deep in the back of his calf. When Cetricus Ra yanks it out, a trickle of night black blood darkens his pant leg. Now that it's off him, I'm not sure how long the effects of my Draenen will last. Wait a second. He's bleeding. The damage wasn't transferred to me. Every charm has a weakness. That's what Cetricus Ra said right before he burned the terrible thing into my ankle. I can hurt him. I'm the only one who can hurt Cetricus Ra. I barely have time to process this information before Cetricus Ra rounds on me, his eyes wide with outrage. He backhands me, hard, and I'm tossed into the air. The wind goes out of me when I hit the stage, my head swimming again. He must have known that even if I figured out the loophole with the Mogadorian charm, I wouldn't be strong enough to fight him. Cetricus Ra stands over me, his hideous features creased with fury. He reaches down, fingers grasping for my throat.
"You treasonous little bit!"
John barrels into him shoulder first and knocks Cetricus Ra off his feet. Cetricus Ra lands hard on his side, and I feel bruises puff up immediately on my own elbow. I accept the pain. There's more to come. I'm not strong enough to fight him, but I've done my part. I drained his legacies. Now, the others can do what has to be done. John doesn't let up. He pounces on Cetricus Ra, who tries to scramble away. The Mogadorian ruler doesn't look so frightening now, trying to crab walk away from John. I'm happy to see him so pathetic and desperate. He should know how that feels before he dies. Before we die. John manages to straddle him. He raises his dagger above his head. I take a deep breath and brace myself.
This is for Lorien and for Earth.
I know what happens next. John will stab Cetricus Ra, and I'll die. It will break the Mogadorian charm, and then the guard will be able to kill Cetricus Ra for real. It's worth it. I'll gladly die if it means ending Cetricus Ra's miserable life.
Do it!
I scream at John telepathically.
No matter what happens, do it!
As John brings his dagger down, I hear a whooshing sound. Something is flying in this direction, fast. A bead of blood tickles my throat, a small cut opening up. That's how close John's blade comes before a chrome-plated cannonball flies through the air, knocks him off Cetricus Ra, and sends him crashing through the stage. Five. He's alive, and he just saved my life. Saved my life and doomed us all. Before I can react, the stage creaks and collapses. I slide down the tilted piece of wood and land hard on the pavement below. All around me, people are running and screaming. Cetricus Ra lands next to me. He reaches down and grabs me by the hair, yanking me viciously to my feet.
You'll die for this embarrassment, child,
he snarls, and begins dragging me over the wrecked stage towards his ship. Nine stands in his way.
Chapter 28. My shoulder is dislocated. That much I know for sure. I'm on my back, with jagged pieces of the destroyed stage digging into me. I'm seeing double, and it's hard to breathe. I feel like I just got hit by a car. Not a car. Five. The traitor stands over me, gulping down deep breaths. His skin is metallic, but he still looks badly injured. He's wearing an eye patch for starters. One side of his face looks swollen, and I actually see dents in the metal carapace that covers his skull. He's missing a couple of teeth. I'm not sure where he picked up those injuries, and I don't care. The bastard blindsided me. I was so close. Cetricus Ra was as good as dead. My dagger is still attached to my wrist, but it's the arm that's dislocated. I grope for it, trying to switch hands. Before I can manage it, Five lifts me by the front of my tattered sweatshirt. Listen to me! He shouts in my face. Go to hell! I reply. With my working arm, I grab Five's metal forearm and heat up my lumen as hot as it can go. Whatever metal he's turned into, it definitely has a boiling point. I wonder if I can get his metal shell to melt off before he can do whatever he's got planned. Stop it, John! Five yelps, shaking me. You murdered Eight, you son of a bitch! Noxious-smelling steam curls up from between my fingers. Five's eye widens a fraction, but he doesn't let me loose, and he doesn't pull away. I'm hurting him, and he's just taking it. You arrogant asshole! Five snaps, and he cocks back his fist like he's going to strike me. I'm not sure I have the strength to stop him. His clenched fist trembles, and he seems to reconsider. Listen to me, John! If you hurt Cetricus Ra, the damage will be done to Ella! I let the heat of my lumen die down fraction. My hand feels sticky with molten metal. What? What are you talking about? It's a charm! Like the one the elders used on us, Five says. He's twisted it somehow! I turn off my lumen entirely. Is Five trying to help us now? Did he knock me off Cetricus Ra not to protect his beloved leader, but to save Ella? I don't know what to think. How do we break it? I shouted him. How do we kill him? I don't know, Five replies, glancing over his shoulder. His expression suddenly goes dark again. That fury I'd seen when he was about to punch me reignited. Damn him! Five rips away from me and takes flight. I climb back to my feet just in time to see Nine charging at Cetricus Ra. He holds a broken piece of the stage out in front of him like a spear. Nine, don't! Nine doesn't hear me, probably because he's too busy getting sideswiped by Five. The two of them go crashing into the wreckage of the stage, broken pieces of wood flying everywhere. Once they hit, it looks like Five tries to take flight again, but Nine gets hold of his ankle. Where are you going, fat boy? I hear Nine yell. Nine gets back to his feet, still holding Five's ankle, and then swings him with all his might. Five flaps his arms in a futile attempt to get some momentum, but he's overpowered. Nine slams Five face first onto the pavement. Chunks of concrete fly up from the impact, and Five's head makes the sound of a bell ringing when it hits. I notice his metallic shell momentarily switch back to normal skin. That must have hurt Five enough to make it hard to focus on his externa. Nine! Enough! I shout, pushing loose of my own pile of broken wood. Nine glances in my direction, and that's when Five uppercuts him. With a roar, Nine dives back at him, and they slam together. They hurl punches at each other, a tangled mess of limbs that I lose sight of when they go crashing through the front window of the United Nations building. I can't worry about them now. I have to get to Cetricus Ra. I have to save Ella. I won't let her be taken for a second time. My left arm hangs limp at my side. I'd need to pop my shoulder back in before I could heal myself, but I don't have time for that. I shake crusty flakes of metal off my hand and strap my dagger to the wrist of my working arm. I'll have to do this one-handed. Surprisingly, Cetricus Ra doesn't seem the least bit interested in staying to fight. He drags Ella through the rubble, heading for the pearl-shaped ship he arrived in. Ella looks a lot like she did in that vision we shared of Washington, D.C., like she's been drained of something essential. I wonder what they did to her on that warship. No matter what happens, do it, Ella had shouted in my mind. No matter what happens. Five must not be lying. Ella knew what the consequences of me stabbing Cetricus Ra would be, and she accepted them. Whatever they did to her, the Moogs didn't break her. She had enough fight left in her to help us. It was like Dulcie Base all over again. She stuck Cetricus Ra with a glowing piece of debris, and my legacies instantly came back. She drained Cetricus Ra's powers, I realize. And, judging by his cowardly retreat, they still haven't returned to him. I might not be able to kill Cetricus Ra, but that doesn't mean I can't subdue him. Let's see the Mogadorians invade while I'm holding their beloved leader hostage. I race across the lopsided and broken stage, trying to cut off Cetricus Ra before he can reach his ship. Ella sees me coming and digs her heels in. She struggles against Cetricus Ra's grip, and this slows him up just enough. I'm going to catch him. Cetricus Ra! Damn it, not now! The Mogadorian leader doesn't even acknowledge Agent Walker as she comes at him from his other side. Does she expect him to freeze? It's her and two other agents who have managed to extricate themselves from the riotous, panicking crowd. Sam is with them. They stop a few yards off, their guns leveled. Even Sam looks ready to fire, his eyes narrowed, his mouth pressed into a firm line. I remember those acid burns on Sam's wrists. They came courtesy of Cetricus Ra. I'm sure he's ready to settle that score. Wait! I yell at Sam and Walker, but I'm too late. Cetricus Ra jerks his head in the direction of the agents and Sam, like they're an annoying bug that needs to be swatted. With the hand not holding Ella, Cetricus Ra produces that three-headed whip of his from where it's hidden under his torn uniform. Before he can lash out at them, the agents and Sam open fire. I can't believe what I'm about to do. I stop the bullets in midair with my telekinesis. I'm not sure if they would have even penetrated Cetricus Ra's armor, but I can't risk it. I don't let Sam and the others have a chance to realize all their shots have missed. Instead, I shove the entire group backwards with my telekinesis. Not hard enough to hurt them, but hard enough to knock them over some of the broken stage debris. It's also enough to put them out of range of Cetricus Ra's whip. I'll apologize later. Cetricus Ra doesn't give the agents a second look. The brief distraction was all he needed to reach the steps of his ship ahead of me. He bounds up them, dragging Ella along behind him, and disappears into the vessel. I sprint forward, determined not to let him escape. The ship begins to rise up before the staircase is fully folded back into its smooth body. I can still catch them. I can still stop him. I'm so close. I dive forward and manage to grab the bottom step with my good hand. The ship continues to rise while the steps recede back towards the open doorway. They pull me closer towards Cetricus Ra and Ella, even as the ship rises farther away from the earth. I swing one of my legs up so that I'm hooked around the bottom step. Soon, we're almost 100 feet in the air, getting closer and closer to the warship above. The steps fold up like an accordion into a panel at the base of the ship's entrance. I push off the step I'd been grasping before I'm crushed in the mechanism and lunge for the open doorway. It isn't easy to do with only one good arm. I end up hanging from the doorway's edge, my good arm starting to feel hyperextended. My legs dangle above what is now a 200-foot drop. Cetricus Ra stands over me. His three-headed whip dangles in my face, the tips alive with crackling fire. I don't think he plans to pull me the rest of the way in. I catch a glimpse of Ella through his legs. She slouched in one of the cockpit's chairs, looking totally sedated. I won't be getting any help from her.
John Smith, isn't it?
Cetricus Ra asks conversationally.
Thank you for the help down there.
I wasn't trying to help you.
But you did, regardless. That is one reason why I will let you live.
I grimace. My grip slips a little. I need to come up with a play soon. It's hard to chuck a fireball with one arm dislocated and the other holding on for dear life. It'll have to be my telekinesis. Maybe if I can push him back. It's gone. My telekinesis is gone. Drained just like before. Cetricus Ra smiles at me. His legacies are returning. I've failed. He crouches down so he can get right in my face.
The other reason,
he hisses,
is so you can see how I make this planet burn.
Cetricus Ra straightens up again and nonchalantly flicks his whip at me. The three heads strike me right across the face. I'm immune to the fire, but the lashes still dig three grooves across my cheek. It's enough to make me lose my grip. I'm falling. As I plummet towards the river below, I feel my legacy snap back on. I must be far enough away from Cetricus Ra. Quickly, I push down with my telekinesis, doing everything I can to slow my fall. I still hit the East River, hard. It's like getting slapped across my whole body. Dirty water floods my lungs, and for a terrifying second, I'm not sure which way is up, which way to swim. I managed to resurface, choking, and spitting, and trying to swim against the current with only one arm. I end up doing an awkward backstroke, gasping for breath the entire way. I'm exhausted by the time I reach the bank, slightly downriver from the chaos at the UN, surrounded on all sides by trash and dead fish. John! John! Are you all right? It's Sam. He runs across the mud towards me. He must have seen me fall and followed me here. He skids into the muck next to me. I can only manage a groan by way of greeting. I think some of my ribs are broken. Can you move? Sam asks, gingerly touching my screwed-up shoulder. I nod. With Sam's help, I make it back to my feet. I'm soaked, bruised, broken in places, with three long cuts across my face. I'm not sure what to heal first. Where's Nine? I manage to ask. I lost him in the chaos, Sam replies, his voice breaking. He and Five were killing each other. Walker and her people are trying to evacuate civilians. It's crazy up there, John. What do we do? I start to open my mouth, hoping a plan will come to me if I just start talking. But a nearby explosion cuts me off. The impact is powerful enough that my teeth click together. I look up at the sky just in time to see the Mogadorian warship open fire on New York.
Chapter 29. Eight's eyes, brightly glowing embers of pure Lorelite, assess each one of us in turn. They linger for a particularly long time on Adam, long enough to make our Mogadorian ally take a nervous step backwards. Like Marina, I'm rooted in place, staring at our friend brought back to some kind of life. Eight floats over the sanctuary's well in a column of unleashed energy. No, he doesn't just float in the energy. The energy is a part of him. Or it. I'm pretty sure that's not our sarcastic, goofy friend floating up there. Whatever it is, I feel a strange kinship with the entity, almost like the same energy now reanimating Eight is flowing through me, too. It's the same electric rush I get when I use my legacies. Maybe I'm looking at the essence of what makes me Lorik, what makes me Guard. Maybe I'm looking at Lorien itself. Two Lorik and a Mogadorian, the entity says at last, its appraisal of us complete. Its voice is nothing like Eight's used to be. It's like 100 voices speaking at once, all of them perfectly in tune. The flashing pools of energy where Eight's eyes used to be linger on Adam again, and the entity's lips purse in curiosity. Except, not quite. You are something different. Something new.
Thank you, Adam replies, and takes another step backwards. Marina clears her throat and steps closer to the well. There are tears in her eyes. Her hands extend out in front of her, like she wants to grab at the entity's hand and make sure he's real. Eight? Is that you? Her voice is hard to hear over the rhythmic pulsing beneath the well. The entity turns his gaze on Marina and frowns.
No, I am sorry, daughter. Your friend is gone.
Marina's shoulders heave with disappointment. The thing in Eight's body reaches out to comfort her, but energy crackles between them, and it ends up pulling back.
He is with me now, the entity says soothingly. He does me a great service, letting me speak through him. It has been a long time since I had a voice.
Are you Lorien? I ask, at last finding my own voice. Are you, like, the planet? The entity seems to consider my question. Through the thin fabric of Eight's shirt, I can see his wound light up. It glows cobalt blue like the rest of him, his entire body filled up with the energy. It's seeping out of him.
I was called that once, yes, the entity says, and waves its hand at the glowing carvings on the walls. In other places, I was called other things. And now, on this planet, I will be called something new.
You're a god, Marina breathes.
No, I simply am.
I shake my head. God or not, we need this thing's help. We don't have time for riddles. I'm suddenly really, really tired of cave drawings and prophecies and glowing people. Do you know what's happening? I ask Eight, Lorien, whatever it is. The Mogadorians are invading.
The entity's eyes turn once again to Adam. Not all of them, I see.
Adam looks uncomfortable. The entity quickly turns away. It stares up at the ceiling, and it's as if those crackling eyes can see outside of the temple. Like it can see everything.
Yes, they are coming, the entity says, his echoing voice apparently bemused by the impending Mogadorian invasion. Their leader has chased me for a very long time. Your elders foresaw the fall of Lorien and chose to protect me. They hid me here in hopes that it would delay him.
It didn't go so hot, I reply. Marina elbows me. The entity's eyes slowly turn to the ceiling again. For a moment, a deep sadness passes across its face.
So many of my children gone forever, the entity muses. I suppose you would be the Lorik elders now, if such a thing still exists.
We're guard, I say, correcting this billion-year-old godlike energy force. Because what the hell? We've come this far. We're here for your help.
The entity actually chuckles. It does not matter to me, daughter. Elders, guard, sepan, these words are how the Lorik chose to understand my gifts. It does not have to be that way here. It does not have to be any way.
The entity pauses thoughtfully.
As for help, I do not know what I can offer, child.
More confusion. More riddles. I didn't think coming to the sanctuary would go like Nine had joked, that we'd unleash some massive power that would wipe out all the Mogadorians. But I expected to find something that could help. Our friends could be dying right now in the first wave of a Mogadorian invasion, and I'm down here making small talk with an annoyingly mysterious immortal. That's not good enough, I say. Frustrated, I take a step towards the entity. Energy crackles around me and I feel my hair stand up from static.
Six, Adam whispers. Be careful.
I ignore him, raising my voice to yell at the all-powerful Lorien. We've come far to awaken you. We lost friends. You have to be able to do something. Or are you cool if Cetricus Ra just marches down here and destroys this planet? Kills everyone on it? You're going to let that happen twice on your watch? The entity's brow furrows. A crack opens in the skin on Eight's forehead, and energy begins to spill forth. Marina covers her mouth, but manages not to cry out. It's like Eight's body is hollow inside, and the energy is gradually breaking it down.
I am sorry, daughter,
Eight says to Marina.
This form cannot hold me for long.
Then the entity turns back to me. There's no sign that my words have offended it, or had any effect at all. Its voice is as melodic and patient as ever.
I do not condone the senseless destruction of life, the entity explains. But I do not choose fates. I do not judge. If it is the will of the universe that I cease to be, then I will cease. I exist merely to bestow my gifts upon those who are open to them.
I spread my arms. I'm open to them. Load me up. Give me enough legacies to destroy Cetricus Ra and his fleet, and I'll leave your glowing ass alone.
The entity smiles at me. More cracks form along the backs of Eight's hands. The energy is escaping. It does not work that way, it intones.
Then how the hell does it work?
I shout.
Tell us what to do!
There is nothing left to do, daughter. You have woken me and restored my strength. I am of the earth now, and so are my gifts.
But how will that help us win?
I yell.
What was all this shit for?
The entity ignores me. I guess that's all the wisdom it's willing to impart. Instead, it gazes upon Marina. He won't have long, daughter.
Who won't? She replies, puzzled. Without another word, the entity's eyes close and Eight's body begins to tremble. To my surprise, the energy actually recedes from his body. The cracks along the backs of his hands stop glowing and close up, as does the one that opened across his forehead. After a few seconds, the only thing left glowing on Eight is the wound over his heart. He floats out of the column of energy and ends up right in front of Marina. When Eight opens his eyes, they don't glow. They're green, just like I remember them. Serene, but with a spark of that old mischief. Eight's lips curl into a slow smile as he sees Marina.
Wow. Hi, Eight says, and when he speaks, it's with his own voice.
It's him.
It's really him. Marina nearly doubles over with a delighted sob. She collects herself quickly, though, and grabs Eight first by the shoulders, then on the sides of his face. She pulls him in close.
You're warm, she says in wonder. You're so warm.
Eight laughs easily. He puts his hand over Marina's and gently kisses the side of it.
You're warm, too, he says. I'm so sorry, Eight. I'm sorry I couldn't heal you.
Eight shakes his head.
Stop, Marina. It's okay. You brought me here.
I can't even describe it. It's amazing in there. Already, I see the energy spreading outward from Eight's heart. It races through his body, fissures opening on his arms and legs. He doesn't seem to be in any pain. He just smiles at Marina and looks at her like he's trying to memorize her face.
Can I kiss you? Marina asks him.
I really wish you would. Marina kisses him, pressing in close, squeezing him. As she does, the energy swells up from within Eight and, slowly, his body begins to break apart. It's different from when a Mogadorian disintegrates. It's as if, for a moment, I can see every cell in Eight's body and see how the energy from the well glows in between each of them. One by one, those pieces of Eight dissolve, and he becomes one with the light. Marina tries to cling to him, but her fingers pass right through the energy. And then he's gone. The light flows back to the well and recedes deep under the ground. The heartbeat we triggered grows fainter. I can still hear it, but only if I really listen. The chamber is peaceful again, lit only by the glowing lorelite carvings on the wall. I feel fresh air on my back and turn around to see that a door has opened up in the wall. It leads to a staircase, sunlight coming in from the outside. Marina collapses against me, a sobbing wreck. I hug her close and try not to break down myself. Adam watches us without staring too hard and wipes at something in the corner of his eye. We should go, Adam says quietly. The others will need our help. I nod at him
I wonder if we even accomplished anything down here. It was beautiful seeing 8 again, even for a few fleeting moments. Yet my conversation with the intergalactic entity that grants us our legacies sure didn't yield a lot of answers. Meanwhile, the time until a Mogadorian invasion is probably running out, if it hasn't already. Marina squeezes my arm. I look down at her. I saw it, Six, Marina whispers to me. When I kissed him, I saw inside the thing. Lorian, the energy, whatever you want to call it. Okay, I say, wanting to be gentle with her but not sure we have time for this. And? Marina grins at me. It's spreading, Six. Through the earth. It's spreading everywhere. What does that mean? Adam asks. It means, Marina says, wiping her face and standing up straight, that we aren't alone anymore.
Chapter 30 Skyscrapers burn. We run. The Mogadorian warship crawls across New York's skyline, its massive energy cannons bombarding the blocks indiscriminately. The warship already disgorged dozens of armed scout ships, the smaller vessels zipping up and down the avenues, ferrying warriors to the ground, where they blast whatever civilians they come across. Other things leap down from the ship, too. Hungry, angry things. I haven't seen any yet. I've only heard their terrible howls rising above the explosions. Pikin. New York City is lost. That much I know for sure. There's no turning back the Mogadorians at this point. I have no idea how the other cities where Mogadorian warships were spotted are doing. The network is down in New York, and my satellite phone sunk to the bottom of the East River. All we can do is run, just like I've been doing my entire life. Except now, unfortunately, there are a million people running with me. Run! I shout at anyone we come across. Run until you can't see their ships! Survive, regroup, and we will fight them! Sam is with me. His face is ashen, and he looks like he's going to be sick. He never saw what the Mogadorians did to Lorian. He's been through some hard times with us, but never anything like this. I think he always believed that we would win. He never thought this day would come. I've let him down. I don't know where 9 and 5 are. There aren't any new scars burning their way across my ankle. So they haven't killed each other. Yet. I lost Agent Walker, too. She and her agents are on their own. I hope they make it out alive. If they do, maybe they'll be smart enough to meet us back at Ashwood Estates. If Sam and I can even make it that far. We run down the streets filled with smoke, darting around overturned cars, climbing over fallen chunks of buildings. When one of the scout ships cruises by, we duck into alleys or hide in doorways. I could fight them. With all the anger I'm holding on to, I'm sure I could rip through them in no time. I could easily take down one of the scout ships on my own. But I'm not on my own. There are about 20 survivors following me and Sam. A family I pulled off a burning balcony with my telekinesis, a pair of blood-splattered NYPD officers who saw me take down a pair of Moog warriors, a group that came out from hiding in a restaurant when I flashed my lumen inside, and others still. I can't save everyone in this city, but I'll do what I can. That means not picking fights with the Mogadorians. At least, not until I can get these people to safety. I avoid trouble wherever I can. It isn't always possible. We cross an intersection where slashed power lines are draped across the burned husk of a city bus, and we run right into a dozen Mogadorian warriors. They bring their blasters around on us, but I blow them back with a fireball before they can squeeze off any shots. The ones who aren't immediately incinerated get popped by the cops standing behind me. I look over my shoulder, nodding to the officers. Nice shooting.
We got your back, John Smith,
one of them says. I don't even think to ask how he knows my name. Our group runs a few more blocks before I'm drawn to the sound of nearby screaming. Around the corner, we find a young couple trying to escape from their burning apartment building via the fire escape. The bolts look like they've come unmoored from the wall near the roof, and now the whole fire escape hangs like a crooked finger over the street. Still 5 stories up, the guy has fallen over the railing. His girlfriend desperately tries to pull him back over the side. Sarah's face flashes into my mind. Just stay alive, I think. Survive this and we'll be together. I'm going to make it back to her. I run towards the fire escape, bracing it from a distance with my telekinesis. Let go! I shout up at the couple. I'll catch you!
Are you friggin' nuts?
The guy yells back. None of us have time to argue, so I reach out with my telekinesis and just yank the couple off the fire escape. As I'm lowering them to the ground, I hear the beats of heavy footfalls bearing down on me.
John!
Sam screams.
Look out!
I turn my head. It's a piken. The beast gallops towards me at full speed, its jaws covered with slobber, its razor-sharp teeth bared. I hear screams from my group. The cops take some shots at the monster, but they don't even slow it down. The others have the good sense to run from the rabid Mogadorian beast. Except the direction they run in puts them right beneath the fire escape, which, of course, chooses that exact moment to tear fully away from its building and come clattering down into the street. I've still got the couple suspended in the air, and now I'm holding up the fire escape with my telekinesis, too. I try to divide my focus enough to turn on my lumen, but it's just too much. I'm too exhausted. The strain is more than I can manage. The piken is almost on top of me. Sarah's face flashes again to the forefront of my mind. I have to try. I grit my teeth and dig down deeper. With a massive woof, a wave of telekinetic force hits the piken and knocks it into the air. The beast's muscular legs flail wildly. It lands back first on top of a stop sign, the pole impaling the beast right through the heart. That didn't come from me. I lower the couple safely to the ground, toss the fire escape aside, and turn in the direction the telekinetic blast came from. Sam stares at me. He's frozen. His hands are extended out in front of him like he just shoved the pike in and still hasn't finished with the follow-through. Slowly he blinks his eyes. Sam looks down at his hands, then over at me.
Holy shit, he says. Did I just do that?
This is Neil Kaplan. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Revenge of Seven by Pittacus Lore. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Peter Straub. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright, 2014, by Pittacus Lore. Production copyright, 2014, by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.